Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah Kid Podcast. Welcome back. I am coming to you guys. This is a Saturday episode. You know how we give it up. We got a lot to get into today. College football, NFL, Cowboys, Dak Prescott. Can't wait to get into it. You guys know how we give it up on a Saturday. This will be a Saturday episode. So shouts out to everyone that may be tuning in, tapped in, listening. Greatly, greatly appreciated. But first and foremost, you know how we introduce ourselves. I am the humble, highly favorite host of the Isaiah Kid Podcast, Isaiah Kid. Thank you, everyone that is listening under the sound of my voice. Shouts out to everyone that's listening. Shouts out to all the first-time listeners. Shouts out to all the regular listeners. Shouts out to all the last-time listeners. Shouts out to all the second-time listeners. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. I really do mean it. I know I keep saying it, but I really do mean it. Like, appreciate all of the love. Any DSP that you may be, you know, streaming this podcast on, greatly appreciate it. We got a lot to get into today, and I want to talk about Thursday night football with Dallas Seahawks. Obviously, you guys, my top 10 teams going into week 13. College football, this is conference championship weekend, so I'll break down Oregon and Washington, look ahead to Georgia, Alabama, and, you know, some other potential playoff scenarios probably. So we got a lot to get into. This is going to be a real insightful pod. And let's start with the Cowboys. Dak Prescott getting a nice win versus the Seahawks. Let's start right there. So on Thursday Night Football, and these Thursday night games can be really, really hard to watch at times, depending on the matchup. But this week, I was like, wow, okay, we get Cowboys. Obviously, Cowboys, they draw a lot of eyes. Like, on average, the Cowboys on average probably get like 20 million people watching. So they know how big they are. They know how many people are watching primetime. And Seattle's not a bad football team. Not a great football team. They're a good football team. They're gonna probably make the last two wild card spots in the NFC. So they're a good playoff. They're a good caliber team. So this should be a good game. Cowboys walked away, or I should say squeaked away, with the 41-35 victory. And, Seattle low-key probably had one of their best offensive performances, mixed in with Dallas having probably their worst defensive performances of the season. So you kind of got those two in one, where a lot of people were like, wow, Dallas defense gave up 35 points to this inconsistent Seattle offense. And it's like, well, Seattle had their best offensive night while Dallas had their worst defensive night of the season. So that's how you get Seattle scoring 35 points. I think they kind of caught Dallas off guard. And Dallas, let's be honest, I mean, they're so used to dominating teams at home, like, you know, just putting belt the ass to teams at home. It's like, wow, Dallas had a competitive game at home. Yes, they did. But Dallas squeaks away with the win. 14 straight home victories. I think that is a franchise record, I think. But nevertheless, they got the win. And their defense wasn't great. But let's have an honest conversation. That shouldn't be hard. This shouldn't be a hard conversation for some people. But I know there's a lot of other people. There's a percentage of you guys that, you know, may not want to admit this, or you may be having some hard time coming to grips with this. But, and I have to bring this up, and I have to talk about this, because certain people, like, there's a lot of people, there's a handful of people, when they're talking about the Cowboys, and, like, it gets really corny. Dak Prescott is really, really good. Like, I'm not saying he's elite. I'm not saying he's Joe Montana in his prime. No. But Dak Prescott is really good. And for some time, he's been really good. I've never quite understood the debate of, like, is Dak Prescott, like, the whole interception narrative, I think, coming into, like, the whole interception narrative from last year, I think, was wildly overstated. Because if you look at throughout the course of his career, he hasn't been a high turnover guy. So that one year kind of seems as if it was an anomaly or an outlier. Those things do exist, right? I think people forgot about those mathematical terms or those terms where sometimes things happen and they don't happen often. So we call those things outliers or anomalies because they're not repetitive, right? And with Dak, at the moment, there's just no way around it. Like, you can love him, you can hate him. There's no way around having to say that Dak Prescott is really, really good. And for the longest, for my regular listeners, they kind of understand how I feel about Dak. I always thought Dak was really good. Never thought he was a top five-ish quarterback, but I was like, he's somewhere in my top 8 to 10 quarterbacks. He's somewhere between 8, 9, 10. And at this moment, Dak Prescott is playing the position over the past month and a half. He's playing the position as well as anybody. I mean, that includes everybody. Like, he is playing the position at a very elite level at the moment. Not saying he's elite, but at the moment, he's playing it at an elite level, and he's playing it as well as you can play it. I think that is point blank facts. Like, last six games, 20 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. The Cowboys are 5-1. There is no way to escape that. What you're seeing is, yes, for sure, in fact, it's happening. And for sure, Dak Prescott is well in the thick of the MVP conversation as we sit here going into week 13. Yes. 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 I know his $40 million contract, it doesn't look as crazy and taboo as it does now, or it doesn't look as crazy or taboo now as it did in 2020, right? You know, a lot of people, if Dak Prescott got that money, they're like, hey, whoa, you sure you want Dak Prescott to command $40 million in your books? Well, you fast forward 3 years later in 2023, that $40 million deal doesn't look as bad, doesn't look as shabby. Some might say it was a bargain, right? But Dak is playing at an MVP caliber level. I think there's no debate about it. And when I look at quarterbacks, when I evaluate these quarterbacks, I mean, he's showing it all. His tape says it all. The numbers says it all. The PFF grades, they say, like, it says it all. The tape doesn't lie. I mean, he's showing it all, the accuracy. He's making different type of arm angle throws. The timing has been really good with Dak. His mechanics have been cleaned up. The deep ball is working. It's been effective and efficient. He's been able to play make, and he's shown some escapability, being able to extend plays, making broken plays into something. Like, I love that. And I think, as we all know, if you've been a listener of mine in 2023, and I saw my Spotify rap, we got quite a few new listeners. You guys know that at the quarterback position, I think it is merely impossible to be. At this point, I feel like you have to have some type of innate ability to either play make, extend plays, make broken plays into, like, positive. You have to have that innate ability in order to compete at the highest level at the quarterback spot. You gotta have it. You gotta have it. I mean, you can look at any thriving high-end quarterback in the league. they have that innate ability that I'm talking about. Dak has been showing it. Mahomes shows it. He's the, like, Mahomes is the epitome of it. Josh Allen is the epitome of it. You know, Jalen Hurts can do it. Lamar can do it. Like, the high-end Justin Herbert, the high-end guys, Lamar, those guys can do it. And you have to have a little bit in that, in your game, right? Don't got to be the most athletic. Dak is not the most athletic. You know, Dak doesn't have the strongest arm. But he's been showcasing. He's been checking all of the boxes. Clutch play, playmaking, timing, efficient, accuracy, timing. He's been checking all of the boxes. And I know people, the biggest knock that I've heard about the Cowboys this year so far, or like the most constant thing I'm hearing, is, well, Isaiah, they haven't faced anybody. They've played cupcake games and weak schedules and weak opponents, right? That's what I hear. And this is no, by the way, this is no shade to this particular team or this player. But when I hear people say that about the Cowboys, and then also when we're talking about Dax, where Dax should stack and where he may lay in the MVP conversation. Well, if you're going to use that argument for the Cowboys, you got to use it for the Eagles as well. Because the Eagles have played the same teams the Cowboys have played. But it's just that the Eagles have been barely beating these so-called weak opponents, as the Cowboys have been handling business and have been putting belt to ass to these teams. So, for instance, Philly played the Patriots week one, 25-20. The Eagles won, but the Cowboys played the Patriots. They won 38-3. The Eagles played the Commanders twice. The Eagles beat the Commanders twice, but it was a combined margin of 10 points. The first matchup, Eagles won by 3 in overtime. The second matchup, the Eagles won by 7. Okay. Well, and you're like, well, Isaiah, the Commanders and Eagles are division opponents and they play each other hard. Oh, so the Commanders didn't get up for the Cowboys, who's their biggest arch rivals? I guess not. Because the Cowboys beat the Commanders 45-10. Another belt to ass whooping, right? Eagles played the Rams 23-14. Cool. Cowboys played the Rams 43-20. Eagles played the Jets, and actually, they lost. That's the only loss in the season. Granted, I give you that. But they lost 14-20. Guess what? The Cowboys beat the Jets 30-10. And in a lot of these performances, like the Jets game, Dak Prescott played really well. Jalen Hurts didn't. Like, Jalen Hurts didn't play that well versus New England. Dak Prescott did. Jalen Hurts didn't play that well versus the Jets. Dak Prescott did. So all of these teams that are so-called weak, the Cowboys have been dominating them, and Philly have just been barely beating them, or in the Jets' case, they've been losing, or they lost. But yet, Jalen Hurts is the MVP front runner. And I get it. The Eagles, they have played the Dolphins. They have played the Bills. They have played the Chiefs. And they have won all of those games. I give you that. I concede that point. They even beat the Cowboys. But in three of those four games, Jalen Hurts was outplayed by the other quarterback. Jalen Hurts was outplayed by Josh Allen. Jalen Hurts was outplayed by Patrick Mahomes. And Jalen Hurts was outplayed by Dak Prescott in those games. He's been outplayed. So in that case, if we're going to mention the weak opponent argument against the Cowboys and Dak and his whole MVP combo, we got to bring it up for Jalen Hurts. We have to bring it up for Jalen Hurts because it's only fair. And in those tough games that Jalen Hurts has played in, I would say he's played mediocre. I think the Bills game, he has some high moments, but he has some low points. I think the kind of balance himself out, I think he played mediocre. The Kansas City game, he has some big moments, but for the most part, he was mediocre. So when we're talking about Jalen Hurts potentially being the front runner, I just don't quite grasp it, because it's been quite shown for multiple games. There's a multitude of games this year where Jalen Hurts has been like very, very pedestrian, and the Eagles have won. I think that kind of hurts his MVP case, because that shows they don't need him to play at a high level in order for them to win. For the Cowboys, I mean, some of these games, they have needed Dak to play at a high level in order for them to win. And he's played at a high level, and they have won. So I don't get the whole Jalen Hurts MVP frontrunner thing. I don't know. You know, hey, I'm not saying Dak is the frontrunner, but I think Dak has a more compelling argument and case for being the frontrunner than Jalen Hurts does. That's just my POV of it. But outside of Dak, the Cowboys, they got some really great momentum, and they are a Super Bowl contender. I've kind of said this. I think they are a Super Bowl contender. Now, you know, in terms of like Mike McCarthy, they have the Jimmy and Joes, right? They got the players. Jerron Bland is having a great year. And the whole thing about the big thing about Jerron Bland was when Trayvon Diggs went down, who is, you know, obviously great playmaker, catches a lot of picks. He is that for the Cowboys. A lot of people was like, where are you going to get that missing production from? And he, lo and behold, Jerron Bland, he comes out of nowhere, and not come out of nowhere, but because he was pretty good last year, but comes onto the scene. He sets NFL records. He's catching, he's going to finish with like 50 picks at the end of the year. Like, he's well on his way to being an All-Pro. So there goes that. Obviously, Micah Parsons is a complete just animal. How many guys is just better? Just peer out better than Micah Parsons at football. Like, not a lot of guys at all. Mike McCarthy, you got to give Mike McCarthy some credit. You got to a lot of people bang on Mike McCarthy, and I'm one of them. But he's gonna have this team winning probably 12 plus games in three consecutive years. And, you know, I've been trying to figure out why the Cowboys, they're never disciplined. They get a lot of penalties. I don't know. I can't figure it out. But you don't get style points in the NFL. The record, it's a win-loss record. They win football games. They win a lot of them. And Mike McCarthy, you got to give him some leeway. You got to give him some credit. Because the Cowboys continue to win. I think sometimes they're not as buttoned up as they should be. But like I said, you don't get style points. All we count is the W's and the losses. So that's just what it is. But Dallas is very much in the thick of things when we talk about Super Bowl contenders, especially when they get this high-end level from Dak Prescott. CeeDee Lamb is emerging. He's gonna be an All-Pro this year. Like, when they get this type of level from Dak Prescott, play this type of play. And I mentioned it when he played greater versus the Chargers game, because that's where it all started. It started in the Chargers game. When you get that type of play from Dak Prescott, the Cowboys are really, really dangerous. And the last thing I want to touch on with Dak and this whole MVP conversation, it's what Dak is facing right now is what we call a preconceived bias, or people having preconceived biases, because Dak is facing, I think some of it with the whole MVP thing is he is facing some preconceived notions of who he is as a quarterback prior to this year. And the preconceived notions were, or the questions that were surrounding Dak is, can he take care of the football? Is he even a top 10 quarterback? Is he elite? Those were the questions. Because I know a lot of people do like blind resumes. If you did not know Dak Prescott's name and his team was associated with the numbers. If I told you a quarterback was 9-3 with Dak's numbers, with Dak exact numbers, with the margin of victory, like the dominate, like that would, that's the resume of a MVP frontrunner. So for a quarterback that people thought of more highly prior to this year, if they were having this same exact year, they would be the MVP favorites. So for instance, going into each year, you know how people like, I'm picking Josh Allen to win MVP, or I'm picking Joe Burrow to win MVP. If Josh Allen, like for instance, if Josh Allen had numbers like this, if he had a resume like this, the notion coming into the season was, oh yeah, Josh Allen is one of the MVP candidates, and he's being picked by a lot of people. So him having a resume like this, yes, he's MVP favored. Or a guy like Trevor Lawrence, or a guy like Justin Herbert. Guys like that, where the preconceived notion coming into the year is we are expecting MVP caliber play, i.e. like Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow. You know, a lot of people expected Trevor Lawrence to take a leap, right? If Trevor Lawrence had this same resume and the Jaguars was just kicking ass and taking names, he would probably be the MVP favorite. But since people have these preconceived notions and preconceived biases about Dak Prescott and who he is as a quarterback, he's not the MVP favorite. Because he was, because we were like, him winning MVP was not even prior to the year, was not even in the minds of people. It probably wasn't even in the minds of Cowboy fans. But so him winning MVP or him being the favorite is just so far-fetched to some people, because months ago they were asking, is he even elite? Like that was the conversation. Is he even a top 10 quarterback? That was the conversation. So some of those preconceived notions and biases is carrying over and having a carryover effect into what we're actually seeing in reality, in which in reality, with his numbers, his resume, he should be a MVP favorite. But because of those preconceived notions, he's not. And if it was other quarterbacks attached to this resume that Dak has put up this year, we may be having a different story, and people may change the tune of their song. Let's move on to Seattle. So let's talk about the Seahawks, because their offense, Seattle, and I give Pete, John Snyder, I give these guys credit. They have made a great transition and a great pivot from Russell Wilson. They didn't want him no more. Pete thought he was uncoachable. Like, time, you know, it just ran its course, and Pete wanted him out of there. They got him out of there. And I must say, the Seahawks, because Russell Wilson is going to be, someday he's going to be probably a Hall of Fame quarterback. For the Seahawks to pivot and trade away their Hall of Fame quarterback, their future Hall of Fame quarterback, and pivot the way they have pivoted has been really good. It's been really impressive, I might say. It's been really impressive. And it's kind of reminded some people how good Pete Carroll is as a coach. They have drafted well over the past 2 years. They got some sweet DBs in the secondary. The Jamal Adams trade kind of is iffy, right? But they got quality players on both sides. Now, here's the two things, or here's like the two issues that I see going on in Seattle right now. First, they have, as I mentioned, they have sweet pieces on offense. Like, they got some nice quality, not just quality. Let me not say it like that, because these guys are really good. They got really, really high-end players, right? Like DK Metcalf. he looks like a poor man's version's Terrell Owens. Like, he's built, muscular, but quick. He's a stud. He can play. Tyler Lockett, he had a big drop in that Cowboy game. But Tyler Lockett, any day of the week, he can be on my team. He can be on my squad. Tyler Lockett is really good. He's been productive for years, with or without Russ. I'm really bullish on Jackson Smith and Jigba. They got some running backs. They got some nice pieces on offense, right? That's really equipped for a young quarterback to get his feet wet, you know, play, get some experience. This offense is equipped for that. They even got Noah Fant, who I like. But Geno, he had a breakthrough year last year, you know, great story. But Geno this year has been up and down. And you kind of see it. And granted, versus the Cowboys on Thursday, he looked stellar. He looked sharp. You know, there was a couple throws that were off. He had the interception, right? But De'Ron Bland, he seems like he picks off everybody, right? So, you know, he looked, but for the most part, Geno looked really good. Geno played well enough for the Seahawks to win that particular game. But there is a ceiling. There is a defined, absolute ceiling and limitations what you can do with Geno Smith. Because that year he had last year, granted, he hasn't been bad this year, but Geno, he's just not as efficient. He's not as accurate. Like, that year kind of seems like a great story. A lot of sizzle, but not substance. Like, you're not going to continually get that from Geno Smith. So he got paid. You gave him his money. He had a really good year last year. He's been solid this year. The team is solid. They're sneaking into the playoffs, probably at like 9-8 or something like that. They win about 9 or 8 games. They sneak into the playoffs. But they have a defined ceiling at the quarterback spot. And they're going to have to be aggressive in terms of that quarterback position, because they got sweet pieces, but now you need a legit quarterback in order to win games like this. Like, Geno, they haven't been able to beat the 49ers. I think part of that is like, okay, there's a clear ceiling at the quarterback spot. I think the Niners are now, in the last 2 years since they've been playing, since, you know, they've been playing Geno, Geno is 0-4 versus the Niners, right? I don't think that's just like coincidental. And I get it. The Niners are really good, but 0-4, it just seems like there's quicksand, right? And here's the other issue that they kind of connect to. But here's the other issue: Pete Carroll. And like I said, it's been very impressive what Pete has been able to do since moving off of Russell Wilson, which was a bold move. But Pete, we all know Pete, dating back to his USC days, he wants to run the football and he wants good defenses. Well, and I'm not saying he can't have that, but and he has good backs, but his backs are often injured. Like, Kenneth Walker is really productive, but he's often injured. They have Chardonnay, but their defense, they got some nice pieces, but this can't be like, Pete can't run this team like, hey, I want sweet defense. No. Like, your best players are wide receivers and tight ends. You gotta play to your strengths. So there has to be some type of philosophy, some philosophy change or alteration, because you look at the teams that's winning games in this league. They got sweet quarterbacks or sweet skill position guys. Seattle has that too, but they have a clear, defined ceiling. So Pete gotta find a way to, like, okay, embrace what he has, because what he has is really talented guys on the perimeter, but he wants to run the football. They gotta change. And Drew Lock is not the answer, and Geno Smith is not the answer. Both of those are two issues that I have with the Seahawks, and they kind of both connect together. And the answer is, and the solution is, they're going to have to be aggressive this offseason in terms of what they do at the quarterback spot. Whether that's going out and getting a young guy, I don't know, maybe try to make a run at Kirk Cut. I don't know. But they gotta be aggressive in the quarterback market this year. So that's what I'm getting. That's my POV of Seattle. I like this team. I like some of the pieces that they got. I really like their skill position guys. They're sweet. They got sweet pieces. But it's a cleared ceiling in terms of like Geno Smith, right? Like he can look good in the regular season. In this NFC conference, he can get you to the postseason, but there is a defined ceiling. Okay, so let's shift gears to the college football side. As I said at the top of the episode, it's conference championship week. So Pac-12, they had their conference championship last night. And the game was absolutely phenomenal. So I'm gonna get to that. But I want to talk about. So we're gonna talk about conference championship. We're gonna look ahead at the conference championships, and obviously probably some playoff scenarios. And then I end the episode off with my top 10 teams going into week 13. Sorry. But I want to talk about Ryan Day in Ohio State. I know they lost to Michigan. I haven't had much time to talk about it. They lost to Michigan. Yes, this is three straight years. I will say this. The pressure was definitely on Ryan Day, right, to win this game. Obviously, it's pressure on both sides to win this game. And it already has started. It probably will continue up until next year, around this same time when they have to play again. But the unhealthy conversation about Ryan Day and him not being a great coach is just absolutely just ludicrous. It's not healthy at all. And it's just wrong, right? And here's my thing with Ryan Day. 57-56-7 record. That's what he is. That's what he is. He's 1-3 versus Michigan, and he's 40-0 versus the rest of the Big Ten. So like, he dominates the rest of the Big Ten. 1-3 versus Michigan. He hasn't won a playoff game. He's 1-6 in playoff games, I think. 1-4 in playoff, 1-3 in playoff games, I think. So that's just what it is. And I'll say this. I know he gets paid about $7-8 million a year, and people like, well, that must be a great job. I would take that job too. Yeah, I would too. $7-8 million to coach football. That's a great job. That's a great occupation. But most of you guys that probably say that aren't even qualified. You wouldn't even make it, right? And as a high level competitor, that I think Ryan Day is, because he's shown it on multiple occasions. The high level competitor that he is, the money is not even a motivation. Obviously, the money does help. And the salary that he takes home does help, right? It does help smooth over those hiccups, right? And, you know, just the everyday means, because society is pretty expensive. But the motivation is not money. They love their salaries. These coaches love their salary. Saban loves his salary. Harbaugh loves his salary. Sark loves his salary. Lincoln Riley loves his salary. As much as I banged on Lincoln Riley this season, and he's making a lot of money, I know, for me, and I don't know the guy, but just from a wild guess, it's probably hurting Lincoln Riley, and this is probably one of the hardest years. One of the hardest years for him being a coach, as a coach, because it wasn't great and it wasn't up to standard, and USC just was not that good this year. And the same can be said for Ohio State. And I'm not saying Ohio State's been excellent with this, outside of this one loss, they've been really good. They've been a good football team this year. I thought Ryan Day versus Michigan coached a well enough game to win. I thought offensively he did a pretty good job given some of the limitations at the quarterback spot that he has. But the money is not what drives them. I think Ryan Day could make $9 billion, $900 million. But if he can't beat Michigan, none of it matters, because you're just – it gets to a point where it's like you're so fed up, you know, like you can't even spend the money. You're so down. You're so disappointed. You're so in a rut, in a mutt, you can't even spend the money. So – I know Ohio State fans like, this loss, it's going to kill me. No. This loss, I can assure you that Ohio State losing this game to Michigan, it hurts Ryan Day more than it hurts the fans. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry to all the fans that pay money, you know, that watch. I'm sorry. But even with him making his money, it is a lot tougher for him to swallow this loss than you guys. This loss is more devastating to him. And for high-level competitors, the real currency is winning these types of games. It's winning these types of games. So like I said, there's going to be some unhealthy conversation about Ryan Day that shouldn't be had. And if you guys remember, if you're a regular listener of the pod, a long, long time ago, doesn't seem that it does. It seems like a long time ago, because now the days are brighter and times have changed. But I was just like this with Jim Harbaugh. When Jim Harbaugh, his first several years at Michigan, he couldn't beat Ohio State. He couldn't beat Urban Meyer. I was like, and everybody's like, Harbaugh's not a good coach, and he can't beat Michigan. He can't beat Ohio State, and he can't do this, and he can't do that. I remember those days. I remember those days very vividly, where I had to come to the defense of Jim Harbaugh, and I'm like, no. Wait. Wait. So you guys are getting mad at Jim Harbaugh, and you're saying he's not a good coach because he can't beat Ohio State? I was like, well, name the teams that's beating Ohio State. Just name them. Alabama. At that time, the only team that was beating Ohio State was Alabama and Clemson. Like, I was like, oh, okay. So there's only two teams in the country that's beating Ohio State at this point under Urban Meyer. Great. Got it. Urban Meyer's winning 90% of his games. Got it. Okay. All right. And that's the thing. I love how people value this Michigan and Ohio State game. I love it. But too often and too far too much value is placed on the result of this one game as it relates to how good a coach is. And I don't get it, but I do get it. You understand? I get it. Why the fan bases get like this. I get why some people are getting like this, because if you can't beat Michigan three straight in a year, you're no good, right? Okay. My question is, who are you hiring? If you replace Ryan Day, who are you replacing him with? Silence, right? Right? So that's what I think. And so, for years ago, I backed Jim Harbaugh. I'm going to back Ryan Day. Because just like Jim Harbaugh, when he first got to Michigan, his first several years in Michigan, Ohio State was in the midst of a historical run. And also, yeah, by the way, no matter how you feel about the guy, Urban Meyer is one of the best college football coaches ever. So, gotta take that into account. I took that into account, and I was like, Ohio State is on an impressive run right now. And vice versa. Ryan Day, he is Ohio State coach, while Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, they are right now currently on a historical run right now. They're on a historical run. And to me, Michigan, I think they're the best team in the country. I think Michigan is probably going to win a national championship this year. I think that's how good Michigan is. So if you Ohio State fans are just too uppity and too good for Ryan Day, and you just seem like, hey, you know, we should be doing better. Okay, cool. Who are you going to replace him with? And I had to ask myself, what is a Ryan Day team? Because typically, people, we kind of classify Ryan Day teams as soft and, you know, the high-flying offenses. Well, this year, I would say Ryan Day team looks a little bit different. This year's team, especially defensively, they look a little bit differently than what they did the past 2 years. So, actually, if I'm half glass full, I'm looking ahead and I'm like, well, okay, we lost 3 straight years to Michigan, but unlike the previous two, this year we weren't like physically dominated. Sometimes it comes down to Michigan had a veteran quarterback. Our quarterback, this is the first time he's ever played in this game. Michigan forced 2 turnovers. They won a turnover battle. So, they looked on par to compete with Michigan defensively this year. And I think that's a good sign because that means Ryan Day is not done evolving as a coach. I don't think he's done evolving as a coach. I think this will only make him better. So, you know, all of the unhealthy convo, I get it, but I just think far too much value is placed on the result of this one game. And as it relates to, like, how good a coach is, I just think, come on, like, Ryan Day is awesome. Okay, he can't beat Michigan. Name the teams that's going to beat Michigan this year. Name the teams that can beat Michigan this year. Name the teams that's going to be favorite versus Michigan this year. Maybe Georgia. Maybe just Georgia, who's only won back-to-back national championships. Okay. My point exactly. Okay. On to the Pac-12. Oregon, Washington. What a way for the Pac-12 to go out with a bang. Hey, if your conference is going to disappear, it should go out like the Pac-12 did this year. The Pac-12, just looking at the amount of storylines from the Pac-12 this year. I mean, man, Pac-12 Out the Dark was amazing this year. it was amazing this year. The Pac-12 really did, they really outdid themselves as a conference this year. They're going to probably more than likely have a playoff team in Washington, because with Washington beating Oregon, you know, Washington, that kind of gave them like the automatic bid. So Washington, they'll be in the playoff. They'll probably be like a 3 seed, probably. They probably won't be a top 2 seed, depending on what happens today. Who knows? But they probably won't be a 3 seed, the 3 seed, right? From USC, Caleb Williams, highly touted prospect, Washington winning the Pac-12, Utah being Utah, Oregon, Dan Lanning. You know, Colorado and, you know, Deion Sanders and Shador Sanders. So many headlines. Even the teams that don't get much love or don't get talked about much in the Pac-12, Oregon State, Arizona, they both had 2 good years. You know, the conference really went out with a bang. Like I said, if you're going to disappear, if your conference is just going to disappear into the ether, Well, at least go out like the Pac-12 did. They went out with a bang. And their conference championship game was pretty fun to watch. Now, I did have Oregon winning this game because I thought Oregon could control the line of scrimmage within the trenches. And boy, was I wrong. Now, this was pretty entertaining. This game was pretty entertaining. Washington got out to a 20-3 lead. Then here comes Oregon, 21 unanswered points. And then from that point on, it's just a slugfest. Washington is able to prevail and hold on for the 34-31 win. And really, you know, Penix, he's going to get a lot of Heisman love and a lot of Heisman hype, rightfully so. You know, Bo Nix played his ass off. I love the coaching staffs on both sides with Kalen DeBoer at Washington. He's just a certified ultimate winner. And then Dan Lanning and his, like, bravado, his toughness. I like it for Oregon, right? I like both coaching staffs. I like both teams. Washington, where the game was really won for me, was in the trenches. Because, and looking at it, Washington was the more physical team last night. And typically, when you think about Washington and this Huskies team, you think about Michael Penix and the vertical threat with these receivers and them throwing a ball down the field. And when you think about Oregon, you think about Dan Lanning, his SEC roots, Oregon being able to control the line of scrimmage, being, you know, physically dominant on the offense and defensive line. And boy, I think Washington, you got to give a tip of the cap to their offensive line and their defensive line, being able to control and slow down Oregon's rushing attack. Washington's old offensive line gave Penix enough time to deliver the ball down the field. He threw for over 300 passing yards. And then also the running back, Dylan, tough as nails. He was able to, you know, I think he ran for like almost one, I think he ran for like 170 on the ground. He was banged up, right? I think the game was really won within the trenches with Washington's defensive line giving Oregon trouble. And then Washington offensive line being able to hold off that Oregon pass rush. I thought that was just absolutely stellar to watch. Absolutely stellar to watch. Now, as I said, Oregon, they're two losses. They're not gonna be in the playoff, right? We gotta now start thinking about playoff scenarios. And you know what? All of the playoff scenarios I was thinking of, I had at least Oregon winning the Pac-12. But now that Washington is undefeated and they're a Pac-12 champ, and they more than likely have earned their bid to be in the playoff, that means there's three spots left. And we potentially could have three more undefeated teams: Florida State, Michigan, Georgia. Now, I'm going to give you guys my picks. I think Michigan beats Iowa in the Big Ten championship game. Michigan wins the Big Ten three straight years in a row. Michigan earns their spot in the playoff as I expected. Okay. So you say, Isaiah, who do you have winning the SEC championship game? Well, before I get to the SEC championship game, I'm going to pick the ACC championship game. I think Florida State goes down. I think Florida State loses to Louisville. The weather's a bit questionable. I think the ACC is pathetic. The ACC is pathetic. The ACC is in a geographical region where they have domes. They could easily play their conference championship in a dome like everybody else is, like any other Power 5 conference. So weather, instead, they're going to play theirs outdoors at Bank of America Stadium where the Panthers play at. They've been doing it for some time. I don't understand that. Like, it's the middle. It's December. It is December. And you're going to choose to play your conference championship outdoors? Now, I can see if you had no other option. Okay, cool. Okay. But they have domes. There's domes. You don't, like, they're in a geographical region. They can find a dome to play in to hold their conference championship. So I'm not quite getting that. That's neither here or there. That's what I said. ACC is pathetic. Pac-12, they're playing theirs in Vegas. I think that's a sweet spot. Big 12, they play theirs in Texas Stadium. That, like, come on, that's obvious. Michigan, Big 10, they're playing theirs at Lucas Oil in Indianapolis. Like, it just makes sense. SEC play theirs in the Georgia Dome. It makes sense. I don't get why the ACC is playing theirs outdoors. Granted, the weather's going to be an issue, and, you know, I wish it wasn't, but it's supposed to have some rain. You guys know I reside in D.C., so the weather is not going to be any different from here. D.C. is really rainy. But regardless, nevertheless, I'm going to take Louisville to beat Florida State. So with my my SEC prediction, I think Bama wins. I think Bama beats Georgia. Georgia, even if Georgia does win this, you know, this SEC championship game, it is highly, highly unlikely that you win three straight national championships. That just doesn't happen, right? That just does not happen. And I commend Georgia. They're on a great run, but you typically don't see three straight national championships. I haven't seen it. It's a reason for it. You know, as dominant as Alabama has been, they have never done it. Like, you can't, it's hard to really do it. It's hard. So, yeah. I don't see Georgia doing that. I think Bama has progressively gotten better as the year has gone on. I think from their loss from Texas, from their struggling wins versus South Florida, FSU, like, I think they have gotten better. I think they have gotten better as the season progressed. I'm taking Bama over Georgia, and I'm taking Texas over Oklahoma State. So that leaves us with, okay, like I said, we got two locks, Michigan, Washington. There's two more spots, and we have an SEC champ, one lost SEC champ in Bama, one lost Georgia team, a one lost Ohio State team, and a Big 12 Texas champ. And I think if Florida State loses, I think they're out of the consideration, right? And we get into this whole argument of best teams versus most deserving. Now, I can stand to be corrected, but as long as I can remember, as this college football playoff universe has been around, the committee, you know, they put their right hand on the Bible, they put their left hand on the Bible, and they say, we swear by the NCAA committee or whatever, to put the best teams in. You know, we're trying to look for the best four teams. And let's just say, for this argument's sake, let's just say FSU does win the ACC championship. You telling me FSU right now is better than Texas? Are they more deserving than Texas? Okay, sure. If you want to make that argument, okay, cool. Are they better than Texas right now? Hell no. Hell no. If Bama beats Georgia and FSU beats Louisville and Texas wins its conference, that leaves, you know, maybe Bama looking the outside in, but I can't see the committee leaving an SEC champ out of the playoff. I just can't. I just can't. So then I come into question, is FSU better than Alabama right now? Or are they more deserving? I think a lot of this, hell, is FSU better than Oregon right now? Probably not. If Oregon and FSU played at a neutral site game, Oregon would be favored by probably a touchdown. At least a touchdown, probably. Oregon would be favored. If Oregon and Florida State played on a neutral site, Oregon would probably be favored. So I'm curious to see how this committee goes, because with my scenario, if Florida State loses, and if Alabama wins, and if Texas wins, and if Michigan wins, well, we know Michigan is in. Is the committee going to leave a SEC champ, a one-loss SEC champ out of the playoff? That's hard for me to imagine. So hard for me to imagine, I can't even fathom or imagine it in my head. So I don't know. Okay. So Bama gets in. So that leaves Florida State, Texas, and Ohio State. Like I said, I think Florida State's out of the consideration if they goddamn it lose. If they fucking lose, it's over. Over. I don't think they're in a consideration anymore. So it's Texas and Ohio State. I would probably lean Texas. I think by my eye test, they've looked better than Ohio State. But like I said, I think they're the better team as well. But one could argue Ohio State's more deserving. Who knows? But we'll see. We'll see how the committee kind of boils it down. But I honestly think if Florida State, let's just say all the favorites win, let's say Georgia wins, let's say Texas wins, let's say Michigan wins, let's say Florida State win. If you're the committee, Florida State has a backup quarterback, are you letting them in because you feel like they're just outright better than Texas? Are you letting them in because you feel right, they're just outright better than Oregon? And I'm bringing up Oregon because I think Oregon, we can all agree that Oregon right now, currently, is better than FSU. Now, Oregon has no chance to get into the playoff because they have two losses. But I think it'll be hard to find a person that will say, yes, Florida State is better than Oregon right now. That's very hard for me to fathom. So we'll see. Because FSU, they'd be a Power 5 champ. They could very well be a Power 5 champ and undefeated and not make it. Because if it's up to me, if I was a part of the committee, FSU would not make it. Because if we're going to have this whole talk of the best four teams, they're currently not one of the best four teams. They're one of the more deserving teams. Because it is hard to go undefeated. And granted, a lot of you might say, hey, they play in the ACC. Yes, ACC is not that great, but it is hard to go undefeated. They did win their conference championship. They did beat LSU at a neutral site. They did beat Clemson on the road. So they got some standout victories. But I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't let them in because they're not the best four. And honestly, you want to know the points margin, the average point margin, the average point differential in the semifinal games is 19 points. You ask yourself, why are these semifinal games, why are these games typically not close? Why are they like typically blowouts? Well, because it's because the committee, when they say, oh, we're picking the best four, in actuality, they end up picking the four most deserving, which at times may not be the best four. It may not be the best four matchup, best one and two, the best 1-4, 2-3 matchup we can get in the semifinal. So it ends up being a belt to ass feast. Like, that's what it ends up being. So who knows? Who knows what happens? I'm curious to see how everything goes down. Like I said, I think Michigan wins. I think FSU goes down. I think Georgia goes down. I think Bama's the SEC champ. I think Texas wins. We'll see what the committee does with that, if that happens, right? If that happens, which I think it very well could. It very well could be in play, in motion. But after this quick break, I will give you guys my top 10 teams, and we're going to be out of here. Okay, so I'm pretty disappointed in myself. I was looking back, and I'm like, damn, when was the last time I did a top 10 teams list? I haven't done a top 10 teams list in quite some time. It's been about almost three weeks. I'm gonna stop it here. You guys are gonna get my top 10 teams for the remainder of the season. So let's start at 10. It's going to look a little bit different from the last time you heard them, but let's go. At 10, I got the Houston Texans. I mean, hey, they're 6-5. They lost a close one to the Jags. I think this Texans team, granted, they may not be a playoff team. I don't know. They may sneak into the playoffs. I think you got to have some high hopes and high expectations for this team moving forward. They have found their guy in CJ Stroud. I mean, that Deshaun Watson trade, did they not strike gold? Like, not just getting CJ Stroud, but they've been able to flip CJ Stroud. They've been able to get Will Anderson, Tank Dell. Like, they have gotten some quality, cornerstone, productive young guys out of the Deshaun Watson trade. Like I said, they're 6-5. I don't know if they sneak into the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but I got them at 10. They may not be the 10th best team, but I'm in love with the quarterback, the coach. I like what they got going in Houston. I got them at 10. This could very well change next week. At 9, I have the Buffalo Bills. You know, I still think they're a top 10 team. They're 500. Like I said, it's an uphill battle for them to make the playoffs. Last week versus the Eagles, they played well enough to win that game. I thought Sean McDermott cost them that game. And I like Sean McDermott, but he cost them that game, and his lack of aggressiveness cost them that game. Josh Allen had the turnover, but he played well enough to win that game. So I got Buffalo at 9. I'm not in love with their defense. Von Miller is in trouble. They didn't need any more defensive outages, but here it goes. So, you know, Bills at 9. At 8, I have the Lions. They can run the ball well. I like how they can control the time of possession. But over the past couple of weeks, Goff has become, he's gotten very sloppy. A lot of turnovers in these past couple of weeks. They've had some head-scratching losses. The Green Bay one caught me off guard. But what's more concerning about this team as I look further and further down the road in terms of them being a playoff team, their secondary is god-awful. Like, their secondary is boo-boo. They have nothing in the back. They're just not good at all in the back, in the back end of their defense. I think that kind of not makes them a true contender. Can they win a playoff game? Perhaps, depending on the matchup. But anything outside of that, do I think they can beat Dallas, San Francisco, or Philly? No, not with that secondary, because Brock Purdy, Jalen Hurts, and Dak are all playing at a pretty high level, or a pretty good level, where they can cook up and slice and dice that secondary pretty easily, which would be problematic. So with Goff becoming a little bit sloppy and their secondary being god-awful these past several weeks, Lions take a step back at 8. At 7, I have the Dolphins. I think they're one of the most exciting watches in the league. But in terms of winning big games, they haven't done so. They're 1-3 versus teams that are 500 or better. Granted, Tua does look really good under Mike McDaniels. Like, I got to give Tua that. He looks really good under Mike McDaniels. So, the Dolphins offense, defensively, personnel, losing Phillips to a torn Achilles. That's going to be huge, because he was well on his way to being a Pro Bowler probably, and potentially being paid. So that's a huge loss for the Dolphins. But I got them at 7. At 6, I got the Jaguars. I don't think they're like a Super Bowl contender. I think they're like a year away from being a year away. But hey, let's take the good with the bad. They're the least penalized team in the league. They're 6-0 on the road. That's really impressive. That's the best road record. Obviously, no other team in the league is undefeated on the road. So that's pretty impressive. Like, they have some really good numbers backing them. I like Jacksonville a lot, but I quite haven't seen that step forward that I thought we would be getting from Trevor Lawrence. So, like I said, I think the Jaguars are a year away from being a year away, because Trevor Lawrence ultimately, at times, more times than not, he looks good, but not great or elite like we thought he would look up until this point. So it seems like he's a year away. So Jags at six, I like them a lot. There's a lot to like about them. I don't think they're a true Super Bowl contender. Can they win a playoff game? Sure, I think they can. But are they? I mean, cool, depending on the matchup. But in terms of beating Baltimore or Kansas City at their home and their in their home stadiums, I don't know. And it's kind of contradicting because like they're their best road. They're like statistically the best road team in the league. But still, I don't know. I just wouldn't take them over those couple AFC powerhouses. Jags at six. At five, this is a really interesting one for me because I think this is where I kind of start my Super Bowl contenders. I think these are my five, like, you know, penciled in Super Bowl contenders. I think these are the teams we'll be seeing in Las Vegas. Two of these five teams we'll be seeing in Vegas in February. And at five, it starts with the Cowboys. Now, I could have made an argument for them to be, you know, at four or whatever. Maybe. I don't know. I think similar to Miami, but I think Dallas is a lot better defensively. They have to win. Like, this next stretch is huge. This next stretch could really change the narrative on how people look at Dallas. They have Philly coming up. They have Buffalo coming up. They have Miami coming up. They have Detroit coming up. So they got some teams. All of these teams are in my top 10 teams list. So they got some teams that are within my top 10 teams list and amongst the elite of the elite in the league that they have to face. It could be really big. So I think Dallas has, they can really, really rewrite their narrative this entire month. Dallas looks really good. Dak is arguably the MVP front runner. Sorry to say it, but he's arguably the MVP front runner. I like the Cowboys a lot. There's a lot to like about them. I know there's still some question marks like Mike McCarthy, clock management, penalties. I mean, would you like those things to be cleaned up? Yes, absolutely. But they're winning games, right? They're 9-3. You don't get style points. Cowboys at five. At four, I got the Ravens. They have the number one rush defense in the league. They have the number two scoring defense in the league. The Ravens are really good. The Ravens are really, really good. It's not much to like about them. I just wouldn't take them over these three teams currently as constructed. And that being my number three team, the 49ers. I think when the Niners are healthy, they're as good as anybody in this league. As good as anybody in this league. I think they're as good as anybody. They're healthy. I think CMC is the engine of this offense. I'm not. They're secondary. But I like Tre'Davious Ward or whatever. Niners at three. They got a big game versus the Eagles coming up this weekend, this Sunday. At two, I got the Chiefs. Now, kind of hard for me because I like Kansas City a lot. I like Andy Reid. I like Patrick Mahomes. Offensively, they're scary, though. They kind of scare me because they don't still have a solid number one. I like Rashee Rice. He's kind of like he's trying to formulate into somewhat of a safety blanket or as that number one guy. I just worry about the offense output and production that they're getting from the receivers. Defense is really good. I got KC at two. At one, I got the Eagles. It hasn't been the most impressive 10-1 start to the season, right? They've had some hiccups. They had some tough games. They have. They've played a tough schedule, I would say. But Philly, I have to put them at number one. They beat Kansas City. They got the Niners coming up. They beat the Cowboys. I don't know. I got to put them at number one. They're a resilient group. Now, whether or not can they, you know, are they going to beat Dallas? Are they going to beat? I don't know. Jalen Hurts, I don't think he's the MVP front runner. He's having a good year. I think he's been kind of pedestrian in some of these games that people are like labeling MVP performances because he comes back and he wins these games. But I think we got to understand that like he's part of the reason why they have to dig themselves out of these holes, right? So I don't know. It's like we're crediting him and praising him for coming out of a hole, coming back from a hole that he kind of dug them into. I don't know. But Philly at one, they're resilient. I like everything about this team, from the quarterback to their offensive line to their their parts on defense. Howie Roseman, I think Nick Sirianni could be a head case at times, right? I think he can be a head case. But I got them at one. So yeah, that is my top 10 teams list. That is gonna wrap this episode up. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Always remember two choices, one decision. Peace, deuces, adios, amigos, I'm gone. Arrivederci. However else you say goodbye. Peace. Enjoy your weekend.